Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. And on today's podcast, I am interviewing the founder and CEO of Renegade, who is building the future of crypto. In this episode, Daniel shares his journey from venture capital to blockchain, explaining how Renegade bridges the world of traditional finance with cryptocurrencies by offering its users an IBAN account with Visa cards for seamless crypto use in their day-to-day life. So in this episode, you will discover the challenges that Daniel has faced, or Daniel's company Renegade has faced, how they overcame those challenges, what is the future of crypto in Europe versus the US. He also shares some of his experience of working in a family office, how they deploy capital, and shares strategies on attracting investors. So don't miss this episode for insights into crypto accessibility and Renegade's journey in the evolving blockchain space. Nothing mentioned in this podcast should be taken as investment advice, and I do not run any ads on this podcast. So my only ask is that you share this episode on your social media. With that out of the way, let's get into it. So Daniel, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. And I'm so looking forward to talking everything about Renegade, what you're building, and about your background. So for some of the audience who don't know a bit about your background, how you used to work in venture capital, family offices, all that, can you please share a bit about your background and how you started Renegade?
Yeah. Hi, Sam. It's a pleasure to be here in the podcast. I was working actually in our family office all my career, and I started as a junior investment officer. And yeah, I just worked, my son worked there all the time. And about 6 years ago, I already had the idea with Renegade. And I wasn't maybe ready to actually fund Renegade. And but then 2 years ago, I started. And it was very sure it's the best decision. It was the best decision of my life. I'm really happy I did it. And yeah, it was also two very exciting years. And I mean, I can tell you a little bit about Renegade as well, if you want.
Oh, yes, please. Yes, please. I'd love to learn a bit more about Renegade. Yeah, go ahead.
I was in touch with cryptos pretty early. And
yes,
a very special moment for me actually was reading the Ethereum white paper. And it just made me really realize the full potential of blockchain, decentralization, smart contracts. And yeah, and then pretty soon I had the idea with Renegade, because back then it's still the case, but back then it was even harder to buy cryptocurrencies.
Extremely hard.
It was extremely hard, right? Like when I started, it took forever. I remember there was like this Dutch company, I think I had to wire money, and it took 2 days until I got my Bitcoin, and it was like, oh my God, like this has to change. And yes, it is still quite hard. We noticed that in our private sale, it was like a family friends round. And when I had to explain to them how they can buy cryptocurrencies, because they had to exchange Bitcoin for the Renegade token. And that made me realize actually how hard it is. It seems to be easy for me, and very likely it's easy for you and maybe even for your audience. Yes. But if it's the first time you're in touch with cryptos, it's still very hard to figure out how it works. What's a wallet? What's seed phrases? How does it work? How does an exchange work? And so the idea with Renegade is actually bringing together traditional finance with cryptocurrencies, with blockchain technology. So in the Renegade app, we will issue you an IBAN account through our partner. It's a Swedish I, so it's a European IBAN account. This is live already. Everything is signed. Actually, since yesterday, our Visa cards are live. We got a Visa approval for fiat and crypto, which is quite tough actually to get. It's a co-branding, so that's quite a thing, especially once cryptos in your flow of funds, there's you have cryptos and everything gets very complicated, and also for Visa. But we managed to get the Visa approval. So the cards are live since yesterday, and now we are implementing the crypto part to our app. So the idea is everybody is used to handle an account, an IBAN account or in Europe in their daily life. And people are used to it. And if they have this IBAN account in the app and they just need to fund the account with euro, with fiat, and one click, they will be able to buy cryptos. They're going to have a card where they can spend the cryptos. But not only that, we are going to implement in the next step very strong on-off ramping rails for cryptos. So the bigger idea is, imagine there's, I live in Spain, by the way. We have an office in Madrid. That's where I live as well. And I met a lot of Latin American guys and girls. And they all, most of them send money back home.
Yes.
You wouldn't, you cannot imagine how they send it home in the craziest ways. I would never send money that way. But sometimes it's the only possibility they have. And or they go to Western Union or MoneyGram and pay.
Western Union, that's the common thing. Yeah,
and it's very expensive. And I'm always asking them, I'm like, why would you not just send USD, Bitcoin,
stablecoin,
stablecoin to your family? And they're like, I don't know how to buy a stablecoin. And if I send it to my mom, she doesn't know what to do with it. And I was like, I was asked, what if I give you an app where you have your IBAN account, you use to handle your IBAN account in your daily life. With one click, you can buy a stablecoin. You can send it to your mom, let's say in Colombia. And she downloads the Renegade app as well. She'll just automatically get a wallet. And then we have an on-off ramping rail in Colombia. And imagine he sends her $300. She can just go to a local 7-Eleven and pick it up in cash, or she can withdraw it to her local banking infrastructure. And they have like different ways in Latin America to do banking than in Europe. And then they were like, I would use it like immediately. And I was like, yeah, great. That's what we're building actually. And everybody's really excited about it.
So I have a question. So do you already have the off-ramp available in Colombia?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Because I thought you only have on-ramp. I did not realize that Renegade also has off-ramps.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's big.
We're implementing it now.
Yeah, yeah. So what countries would you have the off-ramp?
It's mainly Latin America, Asia, including India.
Yes.
Africa, not so much, unfortunately, but mainly Asia and Latin America. Europe, obviously, as well. We could do that, but we have the IBAN account. This is our own fiat on-off ramping.
Yeah. Yep, that's very cool. So continue.
Yeah, and so you're going to get a card where you can spend cryptos. I mostly hear, but crypto.com has that as well. But you have to really analyze what are you getting at crypto.com. You're not getting a real crypto card. You cannot spend the cryptos in your daily life, what they're just doing. Actually, I don't want to do crypto.com bashing. They have an amazing app. But what they will give you is a prepaid Visa card. And you have to sell cryptos in your app and then fund your prepaid Visa card. And once the money is in the card, you have to spend it. You cannot take it away. And crypto.com is offering an IBAN account as well. But this is a pure on-off ramping for them. You cannot get your salary. You cannot pay your rent with this IBAN account. It will be blocked immediately. You can just transfer to your own other IBAN account and send money to crypto.com and withdraw to your account or to nobody else's account. So that's not an IBAN you can use in your daily life. But with us, you will get a real IBAN account. You can do your daily banking with it. You can pay your rent. You can pay your phone bills, your utility bills, like gas, electricity, whatever. Like it's just like a regular account. And whatever is in your account, you can spend. You don't have to go in the app, sell the cryptos, move it to your credit card. You have it in your account. And you can choose in the app, actually, if you pay, let's say you have stable coins, you have USDT, you can say, okay, if I'm at the point of sale, and if I pay, if I initiate a transaction, I want it to be taken from my USDT account or wallet. And immediately, like in the background, we will do everything live in the moment you pay, right? You don't have to worry because I was really a hardcore crypto.com user, and it was always annoying because you have to go into the app and it's okay, you know, I'm just going to sell cryptos for 1,000 euros now, and then I have 1,000 euros to spend. And once it's empty, I have to do it the same. And it's just not a very seamless procedure. So with us, you just define your source of payment, basically, in the app. And that's what we do with Renegade. We're going to implement DeFi protocols as well. So we're going to have two parts of the app. The one is more the IBAN account cards where we have to KYC you. But then we also have the DeFi part where we're going to implement a DEX aggregator. We have a wallet. infrastructure, which is a non-custodial wallet, but still a non-custodial wallet where you don't get your seed phrases. This is always the point where people are like, if I don't have my seed phrases, it's not a non-custodial wallet, but it actually is. They use a technology called delegated signing. So you will sign transactions and you will access your wallet with your face. And we don't have access to the wallet. It's impossible for us to access it. It's just a nice approach to people who are not super crypto savvy. I always use my mom as a benchmark. If she's fine to use the app, then we're good to go. But yes. I know in the process of onboarding, if I will confront her with, oh, that's your 12 or like even worse, 24 seed phrases, you have to write them down. And if you lose them, all your money might be gone. She will just stop. That's the end of her onboarding process. But she's used to unlock her phone with her face. She will be fine to sign transactions and to access her wallet with her face. She's used to that in her daily life. So that's why we're going to implement it. It's actually a French company. We didn't develop it ourselves. It's a French company called Defense. But they have an office in New York, I think, as well. Super, super nice solution they have. I met them in Paris Blockchain Week. Yeah. And I'm really convinced about their offering. And they have a great CEO. Yeah. And I always keep seeing them at the conferences we go. And now we're really happy to be able to implement Defense. I think you understand in what direction we are going. We want to make crypto's approachable for a larger audience. I do understand like the hardcore cypherpunk, he will always want to have his 12 seed phrases. But we also like, it's not going to be our customer.
That's a very minority of the people in the world. Majority don't want to deal with. I don't want to deal with phrases, even though I work in this field.
It's the same for me. Like, it's so annoying. And then in the next step out of the safety measure, but they're going to test you. Okay, did you write down the seed phrases?
What was the third word? And what was the seventh word? Or the fourth word? The eighth word.
And not only that, people, first of all, you have to keep in mind, people are not, like, let's face it, most people are not able to safeguard their 12 seed phrases. We all know the story of the BTC, of the Bitcoin core developer whose seed phrases got compromised and millions were lost. Then there was, I don't remember the name, but there was this crypto startup. They actually had their seed phrases engraved in a steel plate. Anyhow, they moved their office and they lost it.
Yeah.
And there was like 37 millions in cryptos on their wallet. They lost it. They had to declare bankruptcy because they lost literally all their money. This was a crypto company. And how can something like that happen? This is like crypto professionals. So how can we expect the average user to actually safeguard it over time? And the next thing is not only that people are not capable, a lot of people, they don't want that responsibility. They want to have a third party where they maybe can go to and say, look, I lost access to my wallet. Please, can you help me? So we can do that. You can come to us and say, look, I lost my phone. I lost access to my wallet. Can you recover it? And we can. But then we cannot do it ourselves. The person has to go to a law firm, which we're going to work together with them, and has to authorize himself. He has to prove that he's actually the owner of the wallet, because everybody who's using it will get KYC'd by us. If he wants to have this recovery function, we have to KYC him. And once we did that, he can always recover it. And if he doesn't want to have it, we can give him his recovery phrases. He can get it and then he can.
The only thing is that it's such a double-edged sword that when it comes to the recovery function, people worry that the company has a backdoor into your funds. So that's what they worry about. Like the hardcore crypto people.
Yeah, you're right. The hardcore crypto people, they will have this fear. Yes. But not average user. Average user doesn't even know what a backdoor is, maybe. No.
Yeah.
If I tell my mom, like, maybe there's a backdoor in the code, she's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know,
most people care about convenience and most people care about customer service. It's just like what you were saying, that in decentralization, the bad of decentralization is that there is no customer service, because you send, like, say in it's 2014, you send your Bitcoin to the wrong address. Who are you going to call? Can you call cops? Can you call your bank? No one can help you. That's it. You're done. The money is gone. Forget about it, pretty much. So that is such a big risk that for most people, they trust their bank more than they trust themselves to look after their own funds.
Yeah, definitely. And not only that, you know what I also think why I always see this meme or this picture on social media where it says 5% of the world population are using cryptos now. That's the Bitcoin price. Now imagine 25% of the population will use Bitcoin. Like, where will the price be? That's obviously it will go up. But I think this will slowly happen or maybe never happen if we do not change, if you don't lower the entry barriers. And I think the problem is that what we're facing in the crypto space and the Web3 world, that most of the crypto projects, they get funding from the crypto community because they have a token sale, ICO, whatever. So naturally what they do, they try to come up with a product that is tailored for this very small audience because they're going to love it.
You say
it. Nobody else will understand it. So this is like a vicious self-sustaining cycle in a bad way. And we say, okay, if you don't like our offering, you're not going to be our customer. We're not going to create a product which is tailored for the very small crypto community. Maybe they're even not going to be happy about it because, or not happy, but they're just not going to use it. But there are going to be millions or billions of other people who are going to use it. And they're out there, not in the crypto space. And that's what we want to do. We want to get people into the crypto space by an easy solution.
Yeah. That's true. Like, one of my biggest critics of this industry is that a lot of the founders, Web3 founders, only build products that solve Web3 problems, but not anything outside. And that's why we don't get killer apps. Everyone is looking, every VC, every investor is looking for the next killer app, what that would be. But you can't get that. You can't get the consumer app that brings adoption till we are only solving Web3 problems. We have to look in the real everyday today people's problems. And another thing I completely agree with your assessment of that, yes, that we need to make it easy for people to come in or lower the barriers of entry. But it's even what happens after they enter. We need to make that experience, even after they have entered, really convenient and easy for them to stay. Otherwise, a lot of people have bought once and then they realize, oh, it's so hard. I can't spend it anywhere. I can't do anything. Then they just leave it. So even though the numbers say 5%, they're not active users. They're not like daily active users of 5%. Even Ethereum, it's like everyone knows about Ethereum, amazing brand recognition in the world, but it has only got 300,000 daily active users. 300,000 is such a small number.
Yeah.
It's not even like 1% of a 1% of a meaningful population. So I completely agree with you that what you guys are doing is the right way to go if you want to build a big product.
No, definitely. And also what I don't like about how people see cryptos, they see it as something very, something to maybe even gamble, I would say. This is something like a very high risk investment, which it could be. Yeah, it's part of crypto, but it's not actually the really interesting part. The really interesting part is actually blockchain technology. What can you do with decentralization? How can you implement it in our daily lives? What real problems can you solve? I see the craziest DeFi protocols, like nobody understands. You're going to be on a website like, Jesus Christ, what's going on? That's not what we need. That's not what we build. We need to have a solution that's more tailored for a mass audience. And we need to bring more people into the crypto space by making it approachable and easy to understand. And people have to lose their fear of losing their money by either losing access to a wallet or maybe the token price will
Definitely. I have another question for you. So while you're building Renegade, what's your biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge was, the biggest challenge was actually to get a partner who will issue IBAN accounts and get Visa on board to issue Visa cards. So we had to be very convincing and we had to go through a very strict compliance process. Yeah, but we did it and that's where we started. We were like, okay, we're going to start with that first. Well, we did a lot of stuff different than other projects. I think normally in the Web3 space, in the crypto space, the project just starts with a nice website, with a white paper and go into funding, like into a token sale immediately to actually fund their idea. We didn't do it like that. We started developing, we started building the team. It was all privately financed. And once we knew, okay, we're almost ready. Once we knew all the papers are signed with our partner, with Visa, we actually started to going public and starting a small token sale. And people actually loved the idea because they were like, oh, finally someone who's not in a very early stage, and people like that. And we had a quite good, like a small but good token sale. We sold tokens for roughly 2 million in a year from now. That was, it's a really bad market situation. And when we started, a lot of people told me, oh, you're not going to sell one single token. It's the absolute bear market. Forget it. But actually we not only that we survived this time, like we're now there, like out there 2 years, and now we are about to launch. We had a nice token sale. And I always tell myself, like, look, we made it in the bear market. So we're prepared for the bull run. It's going to be great for us. And imagine we started in the bull run. Yeah, easy. Like maybe we would have collected 20 million. But then it's a question, will you survive a bear market? And we are kind of proved that already. And now we're ready for the bull run. And it was a very exciting 2 years. But that was the biggest challenge, actually to get all the right partners, to explain to them what we're going to do and make them to sign contracts with us. Now we're building the crypto part, especially the DeFi protocols. There's not one entity who said, no, you cannot implement DEX. Yeah, this is decentralized. Everybody can implement it. And it was very important for us to have the hard part first. And now the easy part where we don't have to have some approval, we can just implement it in the app. That's the second step. So that's also why, what we did, we released the app, although we're going to release it next week in the App Store, although it's not fully finished, right? It's only the IBAN account, it's a lot already, but it's the IBAN account, the Visa card, just to showcase and to prove also, look, it's there, like we did it. And now the crypto part, and that's going to be the easier part, like compliance and legal wise. Maybe for development, it's still for the dev team, it's going to be the harder part, but it's just something we have to do. Nothing can happen anymore. They're just going to develop. And that's how we did it. But that was a big struggle. There were like, you wouldn't believe, I just had this discussion yesterday, where like our account at MailChimp got closed because we are a crypto company. And there were
really?
You couldn't, the email, they told me in a very straightforward way that we're not welcome as customers. Really, I think it was even that wording. And I made a joke yesterday to a partner of us and said, that's funny because we got approved by Visa and cards, but the MailChimp says, no, you're not allowed to send out emails through our system. Like that was hideous. Although we tried to explain, but yeah, and also the
just
hard
move to
part,
another one, just ConvertKit or something else. So like, many, the 20 other platforms.
I know. But that's some mini setbacks. But also, obviously, one big part is all the compliance part, the legal part. We had to do a very extensive legal opinion on our business case, on the app, how it works. Do we need any licenses or not? There was 57 pages long. It's crazy, actually. But it had to be done. And it was important for us to have a solid legal compliance base, because that's the worst thing, actually, you maybe can do in the crypto space. If you're going to go in a way we're going, if you don't have everything ready if you don't have a solid legal fundament, and you have to have it. I think personally that was one of the big mistakes of Binance. They didn't have that from the beginning, and now they just have the worst reputation one can imagine. And I see it in Europe, like literally every day they're losing access to markets because the regulator tells them to basically leave the country and they're not allowed to operate anymore. I just received an email 2 or 3 weeks ago that by the end of the year, they will not be available. They will not be able anymore to convert euros to cryptos. So I don't know if it's going to change, but that's the status quo right now in Europe. And by the end of the year, Binance, you can only send cryptos to Binance and exchange crypto to crypto. I, as a European user, will not be able to send euros to the exchange anymore. So that's
Why is that?
I think once your reputation is really bad, it's so hard to convince, especially the regulators, that now everything is fine. Now you're playing according to the rules. And it's just harder. If you just start it properly, if you just start properly and you do everything right from the beginning, you show, look, I want to be compliant to European law wherever you're going to operate. And that's what we want to do from the very start, and we want to build a good reputation. And although we're a small startup still, but We want to do it right, and we want to do it good from the beginning, and not just do it and don't. There's the saying, rather ask for forgiveness than for permission. Yes. And maybe that was Binance. That's what Binance was doing. They were just doing it, and then later say, okay, sorry, we're going to change it now. Obviously, that's the wrong way. So we rather ask for permission now. Mika is coming in place next. I think it's a really good thing.
It is. It does seem like Europe is moving a lot faster than US when it comes to regulation and in this field.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yes, it used to be the other way around back in the days.
Yes, yes. It totally changed. And I don't know why the SEC went down that path. They're super strict. And I don't understand why. It's just a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
I hear every day that startups, crypto startups are looking into the possibility that who launched in the United States, who say, maybe we're going to move to Europe because it's going to be easier.
Oh, so many in Singapore. I met so many US founders in Singapore, and they're also moving to Dubai and Singapore because they're like really big cosmopolitan cities. They are also like, I know they're also safer. You also have better public transport, better health care, better safety, secure, everything. You know, so it's just no brainer for a lot of Americans to move out of.
Yeah, definitely. It's a shame for the country. I don't understand.
It is.
They're giving away an amazing opportunity.
Yeah.
That's why I'm really happy about Mika. I hear sometimes that people are like, Mika, no, I don't like it. And obviously, it's the total opposite of full decentralization. And I do understand. But then you have to always question, are humans made for a decentralized concept? I don't think so. A few might be, but the big mass, they're not made for decentralization. As we found out, people are not made for communism. Communism may sound in theory, but in a practical use case, we're going to fail. Communism fails on humans. And it's the same with blockchain technology and decentralization. As nice as it sounds on a paper, in a white paper, in theory, it's not going to work in your real life because people cannot handle it, maybe not going to be as thoughtful about it as they should be. And now let's just look what we did with crypto, with blockchain technology. It's an amazing thing, and we transformed it into one big casino. If I don't know whoever Satoshi Nakamoto is, but I'm pretty sure he's not happy about that. I'm pretty sure his idea wasn't the Shiba Inu or whatever.
Oh, that's not only Shiba Inu, there's around 80,000 other shit coins out there.
That's the thing, right? This is just I don't understand. This is just like a pure casino. It's just like gambling, basically. And that's what we want to do at Renegade as well. We don't want to gamble. We want to really try to solve real life problems like remittance, offering a new crypto-based remittance model by sending money to another continent through cryptos and on-off ramping it there, and give a secure, fast, and cheap way of sending assets around the world. And you still have to have. I also feel in the space you have the crypto space and then you have traditional finance, and they hate each other. It's like this eternal fight, like calling each other a scam, and it's the wrong way. Look, banks are not going to disappear tomorrow. They're going to be there. They're going to always exist, maybe just in another way. It's transforming. They have to transform. They have to transition into a new era of banking, maybe however you want to call it. Banks as they exist today, they will maybe not exist like that in 10 years from now, but they will be around. And then maybe there will be a consolidation in the market. I don't know. Now, like BitSwiss not that long ago failed, not because of cryptocurrencies, but still because maybe they failed to adapt to a new way of thinking. I personally don't remember when I have, for my personal use, have been in a bank, in a branch. I don't know. Maybe years ago.
People don't go anymore. Yeah. In fact, they are like in New Zealand, you can no longer check. You don't have the check system like they still have in US. you can make checks, send checks. It is gone. It's just they've done with that 3-4 years ago. No one has seen young people. They would not know what a check is because the system does no longer exist. And even in some places in Australia, like the branches are deciding to go completely cashless. So these are bank branches. Like they will have no cash. They will deal in no cash. And I remember 20 years ago when I moved to New Zealand, or over 20 years ago, I stopped using cash. I used to use cash in India. Now no one uses cash in India as well. But pretty much like I've just because there's no transaction fees. So as soon as there's no transaction fees, people just move to a more convenient thing. I don't want to carry coins around in my wallet and notes. And in most places, don't even cash anymore.
No, I know. And it's, as you say, it's actually the same narrative again. That's also a problem in the future we face. And if we lose cash, we lose privacy. But we're giving away this privacy for convenience. As you can see, people want to have a convenient way and disregarding their privacy. And so this is also a very challenging part of Web3, blockchain technology, cryptocurrencies. How can we handle that, that we don't get too transparent? Because I'm a firm believer that every person has a right for a certain amount of privacy. Nobody should be able to track down all your payments. Obviously, if you did wrong, if law enforcement needs to know, but other than that, nobody should be able to actually trace it. But that's one of the, maybe the downfalls. And now we're facing also a time where central bank digital currencies are going to be ushered in. And because even central banks realize we have to do something, one day we're going to lose people, really lose people to blockchain. And they don't want that, obviously. They don't want to give out.
They're nearly here. But the thing is that you had to realize that it still brings in so much more innovation because of the ability to create smart contracts and code things in that, hey, if this person gets paid, do this, do that, X, Y, Z. So we only had dumb money, which you couldn't associate any logic to it. Now you can have money with maths attached to it. So it is such a big innovation that people still don't realize that how money will look so different in the next 10, 15 years.
Yes. And this is, again, we as humans have to come to a realization that we have to be very careful with that technology, because it's very tempting to misuse it. You have to think about it. Like, now, if you have cash, if you have it at home, it's going to be very hard to just take it away from you. Literally, somebody has to come into your apartment, find it, hide it, right? So if you spend it, nobody can track you. So there it has.
No, they did in India. Just like 4 or 5 years ago, they banned the note. So the most popular note that was in circulation, they banned the note and they created a new note. So the 1,000 rupee note was the most popular note. So they stopped the 1,000 rupee note and anyone who had cash, because most of the money was moved in, like they call it black money. So it's not declared. So people don't pay tax, GST, VAT, anything like that. So they just do cash in hand business to avoid that. And then so everyone had billions of dollars in the country. And then the government said, we are stopping this. So you have to come into the bank and deposit it. You won't be allowed. So here is a 100 rupee, sorry, hold on, a 1,000 rupee note, and it's worth nothing. So
that's interesting. I never heard about it, actually.
Yeah, it's a very big. You can just, this is a 1,000 rupee note. It's worth, it's just like paper, toilet paper. It's
nice.
Yeah, so all this money is like thousands of rupees, which is probably $50 or 50 euros or something, I don't know. Yeah. But so government can do that. So it's their issued money. So they can just say that all the old notes are invalid. You have to come to the bank to change it and show the proof how you earned it. Or there'll be new currency issued, and they issued new currency just overnight. When they did it at 10, 12 p.m., everyone went to the FPOS ATM machines to deposit money in the bank account, or there were long queues the next morning at the banks, and there was like mass chaos and stuff. And then people were wanting to buy gold out of it, and all sorts of things happened. So it was a massive event in India. And they did it twice. So then people converted to other denomination, and then after a while they stopped the other denomination of the note. And so now there is no 1,000 rupee note in India. There is a 500 and a 2,000. They just banned the note because most of the money was in that note. So government can do that.
Yeah. But you're right. Okay, they can do that. But it's still...
A country of 1.4 billion. That's twice the size of whole of Europe. Europe is 700 million, including Russia. So if they can do that so they can do that in a small country a lot easier.
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario. I never thought about that. But still, if you have central bank digital currencies,
they could
it's still easier. It's just one click, basically.
It's just one click.
They don't have to physically print any new bills. And it will just lock you out. Also, what I can imagine, what could happen, that they will put, I think in China it's happening already, they will put...
Social credit system.
Yes, they will put a social credit system and they will put an expiry date to your money. And maybe you're not allowed to spend money on, if you have a bad reputation, a bad social credit score, you won't be able to spend it, let's say, at Chanel or Louis Vuitton. You can't buy luxury goods with the money, but you can buy maybe the groceries. Or they're going to say, okay, you have to spend it until end of the month. If you don't do it, it's going to get worse. We're just going to take it away. It's going to be burned, whatever. So it can be used like smart money. It can be used in a very smart, in an innovative, intelligent way. But it's very tempting also to use it as some sort of a tool to control us more, to have more power over the people. And that's, I think, it's a slippery slope.
It is a slippery slope. And we are going to go there regardless of what people think. Because power corrupts. And people do that even in the private decentralized setting. You would see there are often projects out there who do airdrops that you cannot spend for the first 2 years. So there is a lock-in period or there are things like that. So government can do the same. If private companies can do, why can't government do the same? They could do the same. So that happens. And there are even projects who do where you can buy their token but not sell it. I don't know if you've come across that. There are scams like that. I call it a scam, but they don't. They say that, no, we are giving utility. We just want people to stay in the Hover system. So they're doing that. And that's what like blockchain and smart contracts allow. But then at the same time, there will be, because of that ability to program it, there will be so many new businesses who would help you convert from this to this or reprogram it from this to that and all that. So we will just build a much bigger financial industry. And that's why it's 80 years ago, nearly everyone, or 200 years ago, everyone was involved just in farming or in security. And now there's less than 1% of people or 2% in developed countries involved in farming. Where did the rest of the people go? They went into office jobs and so service-based industry. Same thing happens in any country. Gets developed, they get tractors, they get machines to do the manual stuff. And same thing will happen. We'll have a much, much bigger financial industry, programming and reprogramming money.
Yeah, definitely. And I can also imagine that a lot of people will try to escape the central bank digital currency system, because maybe they are afraid, because there is this central entity that can actually shut down your wallet with one click or will try to control you. So maybe they don't want that. And they're going to try to escape this system and people are going to use other cryptocurrencies that maybe not controlled. And I'm quite excited, or even also anxious maybe, to see how our governments handle this situation. Will they try to ban cryptocurrencies in order to make people use their own cryptocurrency, their central bank digital currency?
It's very hard with a public blockchain to ban.
Yeah, that's the thing. You just need enough people who believe in its worth and who will accept it as some form of payment, as a tender to meet your financial obligations. But that's the case with every currency. If everybody stops believing in the dollar tomorrow, it's going to be literally worthless. You won't be able to buy anything because the mutual belief will be it's worthless. Yeah, it's exciting. And that's what I love so much about Renegade, that we want to be part of that process and we want to be part of this transition and try to have positive impact.
Give more trust to people. If you don't want to use Western Union, there is Renegade. Yeah, or if you don't use like money lenders and all that, which charge extremely high transaction fees and take a week and all that, you'll have Renegade to facilitate and give the convenience and also give the customer service, which is missing.
Also what we see ourselves is more like as an open platform. So whenever in the future there will be a project which is solving a real life problem, we can maybe onboard them and can integrate them in the app, or can give them a widget of Renegade to implement it in their ecosystem. Because what most projects are struggling is, how can they handle fiat? How can they have an on-off ramping, a fiat on-off ramping solution? Let's say assets, right? You're going to tokenize real estate. It could be interesting for a lot of people, but what are they going to do with the token? They don't know how to. But with Renegade, it will be very easy for them to actually buy the token, the real estate token.
RWAs, like real world assets.
Well,
that's
so very cool. They're going to have their IBAN account in place and they're used to handle it. And then they can just go and buy a real estate token. They just need to have euro or fiat in their account. We will do the rest for them. They're just going to say, okay, I want to have this token. I want to invest 1,000 euros into real estate. and we're going to convert everything, buy the token automatically for them live. And literally they have 1,000 in their IBAN account. They say, I want to buy for 1,000 the real estate token, and we will do all the rest. They don't have to worry what currency I have to pay, or how do I convert it, and what's an NFT? It's an NFT token. How do I store it? They will provide everything for them. And with one click, they will buy it and have it in their wallet and be use it as an investment.
Oh, fantastic. I love your vision. To make this vision a reality, do you have a ask? Is there anything you're looking for? I don't know if you're hiring, you're raising funding, anything. Feel free to share.
We are hiring, actually. We're trying to build our in-house dev team. Right now, it's outsourced. But we are at a point now where we would like to hire. I have to add, we would prefer if this is someone who could come to the office once in a while, based in Madrid, because that's what we're struggling, actually. Our dev team is not in-house. They're not in our office. So all day long, we're communicating through Slack. So I would love to have the developers in the office from time to time. Or my dream scenario would be if they come to the office every day, because our UI UX designer is in the office every day. I'm in the office every day. My co-founder is in the office every day. And our marketing guy is in the office every day. So if you're all in the office, we can just sit together and it makes the workflow easier, faster. And that's where we want to be maybe in half a year from now or 2 or 3 months from now. That's the thing. Also, obviously, we are not really in a seed round anymore, but we are looking for funding. That's the thing. Now we are facing a situation where we're going to need, if we want to grow aggressively, that we're going to need a lot of capital. So we are looking for funding, VC funding, and we are, still having a token sale going on. We're going to have a listing this year, 100%. We're speaking to a few really top tier exchanges. I can't say the name now because nothing is signed, but I know they're looking into our project. They're really eager to list it, and it's one of the top 4 exchanges. I can say that.
That's fine. Yeah, you don't need
according to CoinMarketCap.
So
we're there's good times ahead for us, but still we need funding. And now we're in I know venture capital right now is especially in the Web3 is pretty tough.
Indeed.
I that's what I learned in Singapore 2 weeks ago.
I was there as well at Token 2049. Oh. I was there.
We have been Token 2049 as well.
But
so, huge.
It was. There were lots of VCs there, and you used to work in venture fund. How do family offices decide which fund to put their money in, or how do VCs reach out to family offices?
Either you just meet them in person on events, or you just that's a very tricky question, because literally family office handles it in a different way, and every family office just literally invests in a different way. They have very different portfolios. If it happens that the family is big in art, because maybe two generations down, there was a big art collector, and all of a sudden they have this big art collection, and everybody's into art. And very likely they're going to be more into investing into art. If they're maybe coming from more like a traditional corporate background, and then they're maybe very likely invest more in corporate. And it depends from what branch are they coming from. Yes, it was quite conservative also, but since I was heavy into cryptos and into web, I could push a little bit for that. And we got the first financing, obviously, out of the family office. But
networking is probably still the old school way, the way to go.
Yeah, especially when, what a big thing is for family offices, sustainability. They just love sustainable investments right now.
Like ESG, you mean?
Yeah, if you just have something with carbon credits, let's say.
Like the ESG, the environment, social governance.
That's something family offices like. But there's different. There's very different family offices. Very conservative. They would never touch cryptos. And then there's really open-minded family offices who say, okay, we have to deal with it. We need to get expertise.
Diversify and
that's a problem. It's a lack of expertise. It's a lack of knowledge. They want to invest, but they don't have the knowledge. invest, and which sometimes really leads to the worst decisions you can imagine. And yes, because they for marketing speak, and because they have no knowledge to validate or do a due diligence on the project, because it just sounds nice. And they get FOMO as well. And then it's like, I have to invest into a Web3 project, and they just throw money.
Yes.
But that's also changing. That's what I also learned in Singapore, that I mean, a lot of VC funds, they're right now actually just say, okay, our investment is worth nothing. So the first life cycle of Web3 VC is coming to an end. And they're like saying, oh, wow, we lost 90% of our capital or whatever, because there's some, I spoke to a guy, he's in VC as well. He said, look, there's projects in the portfolio. We have a SAFT, and 4 years earlier, we signed it, and until today, they didn't deliver. There's even the token ready, and we don't even want to think about listing. And we know it's going to be worth nothing. We have to evaluate it now. Left the corner was 5 years, and now they have to start evaluating it, and they realize my investment is worth nothing. And now I think they learned those days, maybe 6 years ago, where they would just throw money into the project if it just sounds nice. If you're able to write a nice white paper and send it out by email, they would just give them.
That was 2021 hysteria.
And that's the next thing. And also, I know a lot of projects, they have a market cap. I know one special project because I know the founders, I don't want to mention it. They had in their peak, they had a market cap of 900 million and now it's 30. It's basically dead. But they were smart enough to cash out massively and the project alive, to not say that we failed, but they literally failed. But they used the money for other stuff. I cannot tell too much, then you would find out who I'm talking about. But spend it on the craziest things now. But this has to change as well. That's why it's nice, actually, why there's like Mika coming and there's some rules you have to stick to and some.
Oh, I 100% agree. I cannot agree more. But I think, and also it will bring in more institutional investment. So there will be this whole pool of investors, founders, everything is going to grow because of Mika in Europe, especially compared to US.
Well, definitely. And that's why we already set up everything that we're fully compliant to law. But we know it's hard in the beginning and it's very cost intensive. You have to hire lawyers and they're going to charge you like crazy. But that's how it is, to have this money ready to deploy on legal fees and to have a solid setup. And we did that and we're happy we did it. Sometimes dealing with it is really a pain in the ass. And you're like, oh my God, this can't be possible. Because you're like motivated. You're like this founder who wants to deliver. And then all of a sudden you face a regulator and you have to deal with authorities and they're super slow. And they have a million of questions. And then, oh my God, now I have to get an email by your law firm and with 20 questions regarding a legal opinion. You have to answer them. And you're like, I don't have time. I have to do this and this. And I have a meeting. but I don't want to answer questions to a legal opinion. But that's, you have to do it. You have to go through it. And you're going to be rewarded by having a legal setup, a solid setup. And it's every founder out there who is doing something similar in the space. And I can just recommend get a legal setup to a legal opinion on your business case, and then you're good to go.
Oh, that's fantastic. Look, I completely agree with everything that you have said. Thank you, Daniel, so much for your time. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you and learning about your vision and what you're building and how it's going to help real people, like real everyday people, not just the people who are like crypto nerds and geeks and stuff. So it's really good to see that. So just want to wish you best of luck and thank you once again.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Likewise. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening or watching this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. By now, you know the drill. Leave a comment or share this episode with a friend and leave a review. I would love to hear from you. So that's why my DMs are open. Reach out to me, especially if you are a founder building a product in Web3. Then I would love to hear from you. What are your challenges? Is there anything that I can help you or my community can help you with? Thank you once again and wish you best of luck in building your startup or your project.